I'm going to give a cursory overview of how to fix your credit, which is actually not that difficult to do. If you've watched any of my other videos, you can see that I walked out of the halfway house with a 750 plus credit score. It's not that difficult. So if you have no credit, it's not that hard. If you have no credit at all and you're trying to build credit, essentially you have to create credit from scratch. And that's hard to do with no credit. I mean, it's, you know, it's putting the cart before the horse. But what you can typically do is you go online, you apply for some credit cards, you're going to get turned down. Most credit card companies are looking for a few different underwriting guidelines to determine whether or not they're going to give you a credit card. But more than that, they're looking to see that you have a proven track record. If you don't have any credit, you have no proven track record. So it doesn't matter if you're making $300,000 a year, you've been on your job for 10 years, and you've got more than enough income to make the payments. They want to make sure that you can do it or that you will do it. It's not that you can't, it's will you. The way to do that is to get some secured credit cards. I mean, look, there's lots of things. The easiest thing is to get secured credit cards. Now, look, you could always go to a car dealership and put down 20% and show them your pay stubs and then basically get a car loan. But look, if you're just trying to build credit so you don't end up with a 22% interest rate, you want to go ahead and get secured credit cards. And what a secured credit card is, when, let's say you apply for credit with Bank of America, you go to Bank of America and online and you apply for one of their credit cards, they're going to turn you down because you have no credit. But they are going to offer you a secured credit card, which you have to put down a minimum of, I believe it's $200 or $300. And so let's say you give them $300 and they'll send you a secured credit card. Nobody knows when they pull your credit that you have a secured credit card. All they see is that you have a credit balance or a credit limit of $300 with Bank of America. That's all they know. What you're looking to do is get at a minimum 3 trade lines. You don't want 50 trade lines. You want like 3 or 4 trade lines. It's a decent credit profile to have 3 trade lines. You don't want to have less than that. Go to Bank of America and get a secured credit card for $300. You can apply to Capital One, get one for $300. You can go to, I think it's Citigroup or Citibank, get one for, there's several out there. First Premier Bank, I think, has one. There's several out there that have a secured credit card. So you put $400 down on one, $400 on another, $300 on another one. Don't go above a balance of 30% of whatever is available to you. So you have a $300 high balance because you gave them $300. You don't want to go over like $100. So you keep around, you go up to around 100 or so and then try and pay it down or almost off every single month. 6 months, you should have over 700 credit scores. I've already done this. I've done this many, many times. Listen, I used to do it with homeless people all the time. I would survey homeless people and then I would apply for their social security cards, birth certificates, vote in their name. Then I'd go to a state where they'd never had an ID. I'd get a driver's license in their name. I'd order 3 secured credit cards in their name. And then I'd just make the payment. 6 months later, they'd have 700 credit scores. I could buy houses in their name. I have a driver's license in their name. I've got perfect credit in their name. I mean, I appear to be a decent, productive citizen than they certainly did. And I would do all kinds of stuff. Here's the thing, though, and this is the issue that probably I think most people are going to watch the video for is, you know, what if you have bad credit? I taught at Coleman. I taught the real estate class at Coleman. Sorry, Coleman. Coleman Federal Prison. I was in federal prison, by the way, if nobody knows. I just got out about less than 2 years ago. While I was in federal prison, I taught the real estate class. I owned a mortgage company. So one of the things I did was I also taught a class or two on credit repair. And there was actually a credit repair course, which I also taught. So guys would say, hey, can you help me with my credit? And I'd say, sure. You know, luckily in prison, you don't have too many guys in there that have, you know, major problems. But what we would do is some guy would come up and they'd say, hey, Matt, I got a problem with my credit. And we'd order their free annual credit report, which is also a pain because you got to do it all through the mail. Eventually, they end up with getting their credit report, and which anybody can do. You can write to the credit reporting agencies. There's three of them, three major ones. You can report, you can write letters to them and they'll send you a free annual credit report. It doesn't have your credit score on it. You have to pay for that. And we'd get their credit report and we'd see what was on it. And a lot of these guys would have like phone bills, because you have to understand, they would get yanked up. Like the FBI comes in and they arrest you, or the Secret Service or whoever, they come and arrest you. They don't give you a chance to pay off your electric bill, or that's the least of your concern. You know, your car payment to your Mercedes or Ford, you know, Mustang or whatever. That's the last thing you're concerned about if you just got arrested on some indictment. So these guys, all their credit goes bad almost immediately. And what we would do is, this is horrible. What we would do is we would send off a letter saying, this is not something I recognize. It's not my car. It's not my cell phone bill. And sometimes they just take it right off. It wouldn't matter if it was a $20,000 repo or a $400 cell phone bill, but sometimes they just remove both of them and it wouldn't matter. Other times they would remove a $20,000 or $30,000 repo on your car, and then they would argue with you about a $500 electric bill or a cell bill, or there was no rhyme or reason. I think part of that is because you have to imagine that the people that are actually working at the credit bureaus, they, you know, these are people making, you know, a little bit more than maybe minimum wage or whatever. The point is that, you know, if they don't remove it, then you come back and you have to say, hey, listen, you send another letter saying, okay, well, you're saying this is me. I don't recognize this. I want proof that this is me. There's just no way this could possibly be me. And we would mail these letters off and they'd come back sometime. They have 14 days to come back. Now, if they didn't come back within 14 days of giving you proof that it's you, that it's actually you, and that would mean a copy of the application, a copy of the check, a copy of your driver's license, copy of a application that you filled out and signed, you know, that sort of thing. And you have to understand that this is the credit bureau. They're having to track this down. They have to then turn around and go to the collection agency, and the collection agency has to send them this stuff. It's a whole lot of stuff to do for a $400 electric bill, you know, and a lot of times they won't do it. So after 14 days, you write a letter back saying, listen, I requested this on this day. You haven't responded. I want it taken off my credit. They have 14 days to respond to you to say, okay, we took it off your credit. That's it. Now, if they don't, you can threaten them but there's an agency. You can then threaten to, I'm going to go ahead, you know, I'm going to contact them and tell them, look, they're going to take it off. But let's say they don't take it off. Now, if they didn't take it off when I was in prison, here's what we would do. We'd file an identity theft report and get a response showing we'd filed the identity theft report. Then we would go to the counselor and get the counselor to write a letter saying, how long have I been incarcerated? And the counselor would write this letter from the bureau saying, hey, this person has been incarcerated for, you know, since, you know, for 5 years. Well, of course, if all the bad credit was typically just after he'd been arrested. So roughly 5 years ago is also, you know, he got arrested and then all of a sudden he's got all this bad credit. And that makes sense. So what we would do is we'd change the letter. I would have the guys change the letter. And we would change the letter to say that the guy had been arrested for 10 years. And then we would take the report that says it was a stolen identity and it's been reported. And we'd show the letters, and then we'd show the letter from the counselor and write a letter to the credit bureau and say, look, I was arrested 10 years ago, as you can see per this letter. And 5 years ago, someone stole my identity and used my credit. And now I have all this bad stuff on my credit. And I just found out about it. And I filed a report saying that my identity was stolen 5 years ago. Now, of course, nobody's looking into it. Law enforcement's not looking into your credit being stolen, because basically, if you're an inmate, law enforcement doesn't care what happens to you. So they're not looking into anything. Secondly, nobody at the credit bureau who's making minimum wage is calling your counselor. And your counselor's not going to give them any information anyway, if the counselor even answers the phone, which they're not going to. Point is, those letters right there would wipe everything off your credit. And that would be great. Now, obviously, you can't do that. And I wouldn't suggest you do that because clearly that's illegal. You know, well, I don't know if it's illegal. Honestly, I'm not sure what even applies to an inmate that we did anything illegal because we're inmates and, hell, inmates stab and kill each other and the Bureau gives them shots. Like, you can stab another inmate. You can beat another inmate to a pulp, stab him, and you end up with, like, 90 days in the shoe. You obviously can't do the counselor thing. Hey, I'm in prison. This wasn't me. I couldn't have done these things. I've been in prison for 10 years. You can't do that out here on the street. What you can do, though, is you can go through the whole process of writing these letters to the credit bureaus. Look, it takes time. Okay, it doesn't even have to be a form letter. You don't even have to put in the form letter. Like, you'll have all these guys go, oh, you have to say under statute this and under this. You don't need all that. You just have to write the letter. They have to abide by that. They don't expect you to know all this. But here's the thing. Everything you do, it's 14 days. And it's just, I don't know what this is. It's not mine. Let's get rid of this. Can you, then it becomes, can you prove it? Then if they can prove it, you can end up saying, you know, you can end up making the argument that you don't know what this is. You're not sure. Look, the fact is, if it's yours, well, then pay it. Say it's, oh yeah, I did wreck it. Yeah, you know what? That is mine. I feel bad about that. Let me go ahead and pay it. Now, you know, or you can, well, anyway, let's move aside. We're assuming this is not yours. And nobody's, you know, nobody's looking into anything. Okay, this is, you know, hundreds of people in cubicles answering letters and emails at the credit bureaus, and all these people have tons of money. And so you're trying to clean up your credit, you know, and you write these letters and they have to respond, and eventually they get tired. Now, if they don't get tired, what you can do, you can actually go to like LegalZoom.com. And you can file a motion or file an actual lawsuit. You don't have to file the lawsuit. You just have to write up the lawsuit. So you actually, all you have to do is go through and answer the questions that you're trying to sue the credit bureau, whatever, Equifax or Experian or TransUnion, whoever, whichever one it is who won't respond, or all three of them. You fill out the form for each one. You fill out a lawsuit, a federal lawsuit, not a state lawsuit, but you're going to file a federal lawsuit. You're never going to file it. So don't think, oh, I don't want to file a lawsuit. You're not filing the lawsuit. You're filling out paperwork saying you're going to file the lawsuit, but you're not going to. You fill out the paper. Listen, lawyers do this all the time. You fill out a basic lawsuit. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be 7 or 8 pages at most. It might be 4 pages. You're going to fill out the form saying, look, this is not me, or I want this removed. I don't recognize this. For whatever reason, this is a collection on my credit report. It's not me. I don't know who it is. My identity was stolen. Or, you know what? I just don't want to pay it. Or it's been 5 years, or the car broke down. Whatever your reason is, it needs to be reasonable. But whatever the reason is, you're going to file a motion in federal court, and you make a copy of it. And look, it doesn't have to be eloquent, okay? The people that are reading these things aren't eloquent, okay? Nobody cares. They just don't want – it becomes a pain. You just want to be a pain to them. So then you make a copy of it, and you mail it to them with a letter saying, look, if this isn't removed, I'm filing this in federal court. They'll go ahead, and they'll just remove it because they're like, do we really want to fight to keep a $11,000 collection that's 6 years old or 5 years old or 2 years old or, you know, whatever it is? I guess after 7 years, it falls off. But so a 6 year old collection for 11 grand, do we want to keep this on his credit? Do we want to spend 30 grand or 20 grand defending a lawsuit against this guy? He's already written up the motion. He just has to file it. And he's serious. He hasn't gone away. And that's the whole thing. It's like most things. It's wearing them down. Eventually, they will remove it from your credit, and you'd be shocked what I've gotten removed off people's credit. Now, granted, I haven't always done it the right way. The point is, it look, 14 days, 14 days, 14, you just hammer them, hammer them, hammer them. And don't get discouraged. Don't see something that's like, oh, it's a $40,000 collection. What am I going to do? It doesn't matter. I've seen them fight harder for a $400 cell phone bill than for a $25,000 repo. So there's no rhyme or reason. You may end up getting the one minimum wage employee that works at the at Equifax that decides he's gonna make this right. I know it's this guy owes the money, and I'm gonna make sure we're not taking it off his credit report. What are you doing, bro? Look, don't even have to worry about that, because the turnover is so high, he won't be there in 3 months. Just hammer away, hammer away. And it doesn't matter. Eventually, when you send in that lawsuit and he has to go to a supervisor, look, they're talking about filing a lawsuit. The supervisor is going to say, how much time have you wasted on this? Take it off. For the first time in the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, in the last 10 years, as far as the credit bureaus are concerned, everything is shifted into your favor, into the consumer's favor. Listen, 20 years ago, it was almost impossible to get them to take stuff off. Sometimes they'd take it off and then and put it back on 6 months later. It was horrible. Now, they're taking stuff off left and right because they know they're bullies. And you know, things have shifted.
Hey, this is Matt Cox. I'm putting out a credit course. I'm going to create this course in order to help you legally build your credit so that you can have as much borrowing capacity as is legally possible. If you're interested in the course, go to the description box, click on the link, put in your email address. You will be sent two letters. These are letters that I've personally used to help get rid of collections on people's credit. And you will also be notified when the course comes out.
Today's video is going to be about Graham Stephan. And a video that I watched of his, actually watched it a few months ago. And I remember it was a really good video. It was a video about credit and about building credit and getting to, I think he had gotten to an 800 credit score. He broke the basic credit factors down into their percentages and really did a great job on explaining how the credit score system works. He starts the video off by explaining that he had just gotten over an 800 credit score, which in most people's opinion is a perfect score. I've actually seen people with higher credit scores than 800. Of course, I also own a mortgage company, so I saw lots and lots of credit. The reason I wanted to do a video talking about credit and the credit scoring system is because how fascinated I was by the amount of research that Graham had gone into to put his video together. And the thing is my experience is in credit is vastly different than Graham's for a variety of reasons. But let me go ahead and explain why. Graham obviously got credit at an early age and started building his credit, and said something like he'd been building it for 9 years and he'd gotten very close to getting an 800 credit score. He got to like 799 at one point. And I thought, wow, this guy's been working on this for a long time. And he's also, you know, utilizing his credit. So, you know, when you're using your credit periodically and you're opening cards and closing cards, or I guess in his case, he's just opening cards. So when you're opening cards and you're buying cards and paying them off, it's hard to really build that credit history and get that high score. And he's done everything right. I thought it would be interesting to do a video that showed the difference in my experience with credit and Graham's experience with credit and building credit, let's say. So let me give you a little bit of background on me, if you don't know. I owned a mortgage company for 5 or 6 years. And obviously, well, I worked as a mortgage broker for roughly a year or so before I opened my own brokerage business. And I'm going to give you the quick version. Quick version is I was a mortgage broker for about a year or so. And when you become a mortgage broker, It really depends on the lender, obviously, or the bank or whoever you work for. If you work for a bank, you're basically a loan officer. You don't have to be licensed or a lender. But I worked for a brokerage business called Eagle Lending initially. I worked for that company. Then I opened my own company. But at Eagle was very hands-on. You basically underwrote the files before you sent them to underwriting. You processed most of your own stuff. Most loan officers don't do that. And you pulled your own credit. You looked at the credit. Most loan officers don't look at their own at these guys' credit. It's all done through a system. But at that point, and brokers, most brokerage businesses now, you pull the credit, you see the person's credit. So I got very good at learning how to read people's credit. And once I ended up opening my own brokerage business, and I started seeing not only the credits of the people that I pulled on a daily basis, but I hired whatever, two or three guys at first, and then it turned into, you know, five or six, and then it was 10. Before you know it was 11 or 12, 13, 14 guys are working for me. And every day these guys are pulling 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 credits a day, and they're bringing in credit profiles for me to look at. And we'd pull like what's called a tri-merge, which is all three credit bureaus, typically. So I'd look at the credit and I could go through and I could determine, you know, what was helping people's credit scores and what was hurting them. At that point, this was 20 years ago. This was about a little over 20 years ago. There was not as much known about the credit scoring system as there is now. Now you can very quickly, you can break it apart. Back then it was still kind of a trade secret, but I very quickly realized how to build people's credit, how to figure out what was hurting them. You know, sometimes somebody comes in and you say, hey, look, you know, you got to pay off these two credit cards and come back in 2 months. Your credit score will shoot up. And one of the things I started doing, which Graham actually talks about in this video that he has, is he talks about what's called piggybacking. So I started at, somebody would come in and maybe they're 20 points off from getting a loan. I would add them to one of my credit cards. And then my credit history would report on their credit history, and they would boost their scores because I had perfect credit. So here's what I'm getting at is, eventually I ended up getting in trouble. I was placed on federal probation. I was buying and selling houses. And essentially I ended up, you know, I think the charge started off as like lying on lying on an application or something. And I think I ended up pleading guilty to like a wire fraud or something. It's funny that the charge I pled to was like wire fraud against the United States, which makes no sense at all, but I don't know, that's what I pled to. It had really nothing to do with my charge. That charge, my first charge. Trust me, there have been lots of charges. I ended up losing the mortgage company and I ended up starting a much larger scam. Well, when I started that larger scam, I'm not gonna get into all the ways at how this whole thing kind of developed, but I basically started creating fake people. I figured out, eventually I figured out how to get Social Security to issue Social Security numbers to children that didn't exist. And then I would build a credit profile based on those false Social Security numbers. Another thing I would do was I would survey homeless people, and if they didn't have any credit at all, I would just go out and I would get credit cards in their names. Or maybe I would, sometimes they would have some issues with their credit and I would either pay off their credit or I would go and get a Social Security number issued to a child with the same name as a homeless person. And I would then mirror those two together or merge. I guess I would merge those two together and create a new credit profile. You're creating what's called a synthetic identity. So I would take a little bit from this person, a little bit from this, and I'd create a completely new a new identity. And the credit system is so fractured that it's actually not difficult to do. And it's people still do it today. But when I was doing it, nobody was doing it. Now I think a lot of people do it. It's a major issue. Now, it wasn't then. So what happened was I realized right away what the formula was. The minimum credit lines you had to have were three trade lines. three credit cards. They could be, a car loan, two credit cards, or a car loan, a credit card, and a mortgage, or whatever. They wanted you to have three minimum. And they wanted you to have a credit score at that time. It was, depending on whether you went subprime or conventional, honestly, it could be anything. Who knows? We did stuff for people that had 500 credit scores. But on average, for you to get a loan through a conventional lender, which is basically going to your bank, you needed a 620 credit score. And I believe now it's up around 650 is the minimum. So, but the credit, it was just as difficult to get a 620 as it is to get a 650 now. So it's basically the same thing. What I'm getting at is this, is that I realized that these synthetic identities that I was creating, although I created this synthetic identity, they didn't have credit. So if you pulled their credit using the new soc or the person's soc, and no credit would show up because they had no credit. So I realized, okay, well, I have to build credit for these guys. And the formula was this. I would get three secured credit cards. Could be anything. $500, $400, $600. I put up the security for the credit card. I'm not sure if you know how a secured credit card works. It's not a debit card. It's not a prepaid debit card. They're not like a regular, they are like a regular credit card, but you're actually putting up the money. You're giving the bank $500 and they're giving you a credit card worth $500 and they're actually giving you a credit line. It's not actually, that money's not coming out of your $500. That's what's called a prepaid debit card. Those don't report to your credit. So you want a secured credit card. So what I would do is I would get three secured credit cards, maybe for $300, $500, $400. So I get three different ones from three different banks, Bank of America, Chase, whoever, First Premier. And they pretty much give anybody a credit card. So I would get those credit cards and I would make the payments and keep them almost virtually paid off completely. And I would just make the payments for 6 months. Well, in 6 months, these guys would have 700 credit scores. They'd have like a 690, 710, 705. I mean, it was out of the gate, but you had to make 6 months payments on time, which is what I did. Well, obviously I built those credit histories and I didn't build one or two. I built dozens. So I had dozens of these guys and I was doing different things with them, mostly dealing with real estate, but there were other things I was doing where it was building up the credit and then getting a bunch of personal loans and or credit or upping the applying for department store cards and major credit cards. And I would just get a whole bunch of credit and then run it up and then make a couple payments and stop paying. Or I would, with a lot of the guys, I would buy houses. So I'd buy four or five houses. I would then refinance those houses using an inflated appraisal and I would pull out $100,000, maybe $150,000 per house on each guy. And each guy would buy maybe five houses. So each guy would borrow a couple $100,000 per house, pull out $120,000 on each house. Plus, of course, you have to factor in the fact that they bought the house and cleaned it up a little bit, whatever. Make a few payments. So if each guy bought five houses, it was basically each synthetic identity borrowed like $1 million. And out of $1 million, maybe $500,000 or $600,000 of it was profit. I'd make 3 or 4 months worth of payments and I'd let them all go into foreclosure. Well, I'd run up their credit cards, of course, borrow more, some personal lines of credit, and then make a few payments and then let everything go. Whatever, $500,000-$600,000, that's like $500,000-$600,000 in profit per synthetic identity. I think in Tampa, I did that to the tune of, I think the FBI said it's like $11.5 million is what I think they said. And they said different things. They said $15 million. They said $12 million. They said $25 million one time. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it ended up being like $11.5 million is what I borrowed. So in Tampa, because there's multiple jurisdictions that I had issues with. The point is that I did this and I did this for a couple years and I ran this real estate scam. But what I did was, it was a lot to do with the credit and creating a perfect credit for these borrowers, which, really when I say perfect credit, I mean minimum. Like I didn't get 10 credit cards. I didn't need 10 credit cards. It wasn't about the money. It was about the credit score. So with that said, Here's what happened. Obviously, I took off on the run at some point. I got chased by the FBI, Secret Service, and eventually they end up catching me. I go to prison. Obviously, I remember it was like every other week I was getting served with different lawsuits, where I was being sued for foreclosures. I mean, they're suing Matthew Cox as James, you know, James Red, Matthew Cox. They're listing all these different things, and all these different title companies were suing me for foreclosures, or because I owed this title company $300,000 and this one $500,000 and this one $1 million. I mean, it was just left and right. God, Bank of America, I think I actually got hit with an enhancement for Bank of America because the government said that I had borrowed, right? I guess I'd caused more than $1.2 or $1.3, something like that, over $1 million worth of loss to Bank of America. It was the same thing with Countrywide. I got hit with an enhancement for Countrywide because it was the same thing. And then Bank of America owned Countrywide. We tried to argue that it was, you know, it was a double jeopardy. They were hitting me for the same enhancement twice, and it didn't matter. Nothing was going my way. Fast forward 12 and a half years. So 12 and a half years later, I get out of federal prison. I go to the halfway house. And the nice thing about getting out after 12 and a half years, not that there's a lot of nice things. Well, one, getting out, that's always a plus. I know plenty of people that aren't getting out. So, but the nice thing about getting out is that I had no credit. The first thing I did was I tried to pull my credit. I tried to go to a free annual credit report, which Graham talks about in the video, how, oh, you can get a, you know, annual free credit report. Well, I couldn't get it because all of these security questions that they asked me, I didn't know the answers to, because there was no credit. They were coming up with these questions that you couldn't answer because there was nothing. The questions were just random, but none of them connected to my actual credit report because my credit report was non-existent. So I couldn't answer the questions because I don't even know where they were getting the questions because they had nothing to go off of. So I could never get my free annual credit report. Instead, what I did was I actually while I was in the halfway house, I went and applied for an auto loan and had them pull my credit, because it was actually a time when I thought, well, this is nuts. Like, I thought maybe someone stole, like, the questions they were asking, just, they just had nothing to do with me. They were like, you know, have you ever lived at which of these addresses? Well, none of them. Who have you ever had a mortgage with? And it listed. And I was like, none of those have I ever had a mortgage with. Who's your car loan with? None of them. I mean, nothing matched. So I ended up going and applying for an auto loan just so that they would pull my credit so I could determine whether or not I even had credit or whether someone had used my credit. Well, it turns out that I had zero credit at all. The guy gave me a copy of the credit report, which I was thrilled with. I then turned around while I was in the halfway house, and I ordered 3 secured credit cards. I ordered 1 credit card with, Citi? Who do I have credit cards with? Yeah. Citibank. So I got 1 with Citibank. I have 1 with Wells Fargo, and I have a credit card with Capital One. So I got 3 credit cards. I actually, you know, it's funny because I actually first went to Bank of America to open a bank account while I was in the halfway house. Denied. Would not. They opened the account and then they closed it a couple weeks later. I applied for a secured credit card with Bank of America, and they said no. Bank of America is so upset with me, they won't even take my cash, because obviously I still owe them a few million. And of course, they bought Countrywide, so I owe a couple million to Bank of America. You know, anyway, the point is that they wouldn't even give me a secured credit card. But the halfway house had an arrangement with Wells Fargo. So I went to Wells Fargo and I opened up a checking account and I opened up a secured credit card, and then I opened up 2 more secured credit cards. And I just, you know, one was for like $400 and one was like 700 or 800, and one was, I forget. It's funny because I opened up one credit card for, let's say, $800. I then used that $800 to write myself a check for $400 so I could open up the other credit card. I then opened up another credit card for $400 using that money. And then over the course of about 2 months, I paid all of those off. So it was really the same $800 got me $1,600 worth of credit. Well, security for the credit. I'm going to try and wrap this up. Well, what's interesting is that, and this is why I like the juxtaposition between myself and Graham Stephan. You know, he's got like an 801 credit score. Well, after 6 months, I walked out of the halfway house. And just before I left the halfway house, I pulled my credit. Actually, my Wells Fargo. Is it Wells Fargo? Is it Wells Fargo that has it? Just before I left the halfway house, I pulled my credit score, which is my FICO score, through Wells Fargo, because Wells Fargo offers a service where every month you can get your FICO score. So I got my FICO score, and my FICO score when I walked out of the halfway house was a 740, was it 745, I think, and my credit right now, I was going to wait a month to do this because I know it'll be a little bit higher in a month. But that was that a year ago? Yeah, that was roughly a little bit over a year ago. Well, so it took me 6 months to get a 740-ish credit score. And I guess it's been about a year since then. So right now I have a 749. What do I have now? You know what? What do I have? As of October 27th, which I guess it's a month. I could pull it again now. I had a 749. So I'm going to throw that up there. And I have a 749 as of right now. So 6 months after I left the halfway house, each card basically matured, and each one of those credit cards returned the security. So Citigroup sent me $400 back. Wells Fargo, they raised my credit limit to, I want to say it's about $1,600. I think I gave them $700 or $800 and they doubled it. So I want to say it's about $1,600. They raised $1,600 and they gave me the $700 or $800 back. Capital One, same thing. They sent me my money back and raised my credit limit. So, you know, I don't put anything on the cards. Graham goes over all of this, by the way. He really breaks down like what factors into your credit score. What I was saying was it's comical to me how he comes at everything from one avenue, which is, of course, completely analytical. He's reading all the papers and he's looking things up and he's doing the research and he's this. And the way I came to the same conclusions that he came to was, you know, boots on the ground, surveying people, pulling credit, seeing credit every single day, me allowing people to piggyback off my credit and watching people's credit scores jump up, or me just getting synthetic identities and then getting them 3 or 4 different credit cards and then making the payments until, boom, their credit score shot up through the roof. Because for the first 6 months, you're not going to get any credit scores. You go get 3 secure credit cards, you can have no credit at all, make all the payments for 5 months, and in 5 months, you don't have any credit scores. At 6 months, that's when you get credit scores. Graham's absolutely right. You basically need to keep almost no balances at all on your credit. So you pay them off every single month. In 6 months, bam, you're going to have 700 and some odd credit scores. I mean, I had my first, it was in the 740s, and that was the first month reported on my credit. And I only had 3 credit cards that had only reported for 6 months. I had virtually no history at all. Very little history. Still had about a 740 something credit score. So it's not much higher now. It's slowly going to go up. Graham, in his video, he breaks down all the factors that go into your credit score. Like paying on time makes up like 35%. Credit utilization is like 30%. Length of credit history is 15%. you know, which I have no credit history. I have very little credit. At this point, I've got 18 months worth of credit history. Yet I still have a pretty solid credit score. I mean, basically a 750 is a decent credit score, especially for someone who just got out of prison. Your total lines of credit is, I think it's 10, it's like 10% of your credit score. And then like the last 10% of your credit score is made up of hard inquiries. And hard inquiries, that's actually hurting me because I have hard inquiries for applying for credit cards just to establish my credit history or just to try and, you know, one, of course, checking my credit to see if I even had any credit or what was showing up. And then the other hard inquiries were for applying for the credit cards. And the second hard inquiries were for my auto loan, which I got an auto loan about 5 months ago. I have one more payment to make, and then I'm going to be able to refinance it because I had to take an interest rate of like, I forget what my interest rate's like, 7 or 8%. And because I had so little credit, I couldn't get the like 1.5% interest rate that they were offering because I had no credit history. They were like, and I remember too, the finance woman was like, you know, it's funny. She's like, you've got really pretty good scores. She was like, I don't understand. You barely have any credit. I was like, but once I make another payment, that'll be 6 months worth of history and I can refinance my car loan at a much better interest rate, probably 1 or 2%. What's great about credit is, you know, it's horrible to use credit for the sake of credit. It's better to use your credit cards, obviously, as, you know, as convenience. I never carry any balances on my credit cards. I think out of all three of my credit cards right now, and all of the limits have been raised at this point, my available credit is probably $2,000 or $3,000, which is not huge. But listen, I just got out of prison. I mean, on my Wells Fargo card, I think I owe $34. I love these apps, by the way. Like, this is like magic. Like, they didn't have anything like this when I went into prison. And it's a little thumbprint. I just touch it with my thumb. Comes right up. So what do I owe? Oh, no. Look at that. I owe $65.60. I owe $65.60 on my Wells Fargo credit card. And I have a minimum payment of zero due on the 12th. I mean, that's amazing. Is it Citigroup or Citibank? I don't know. It's Citicard, whatever. I don't owe anything on my Citi card and Capital One. I owe, ooh, nice, zero. I do owe $22,000 on my auto loan, which, you know, isn't great. All right. So, yeah, I never carry any balances, very, very little balances. Like, I'll pay that $65 off right now. The great thing about having good credit and why it's so important, and I'm sure I know everybody knows this, and you know, I haven't been able to utilize my credit because everything I do has to go through the probation office. They have to okay everything I do. I'll be able to build my credit over the course of the next few years, and then at some point in the future, I'll be able to use my credit. And I'm lucky that when I walked out of prison, I had no credit. I remember I taught the real estate class, and one of my classes I actually taught was on credit and how to build your credit. And I remember one of the things a lot of these guys would say was they would say, well, yeah, but I got outstanding bills, because I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, they get arrested and the cops come and grab them, and maybe they had perfect credit, but the cops grab them. And the last thing on their mind is, wow, I better pay off that $3,000 I owe Visa. You know, they're not thinking that, you know, they've got their cell phones all go bad. I mean, you know, by the time they get out of prison 3, 4, 5 years later, if they're lucky, it's 7 or 8 years later. Well, if it's obviously they don't go to prison if they're lucky, but if they're lucky, all of their credit has fallen off, all the negative credit has fallen off, and they get out with a clean slate like I did. The worst case scenario, obviously, is they do 2 or 3 years and they get out and they owe $40,000 in debt. A lot of these guys, I would go over the credit, over how to build credit, and someone would say, you know, we would pull their credit reports. Like, I was pulling their credit reports from inside prison. We would fill out the forms and we'd get their free annual credit report, and it would come back and we'd look it over, and I'd go over it with them and I'd say, okay, well, you got this and this and this.
And, you know, sometimes it'd be $300 for some cell phone bill and $150 to Home Depot. Or, you know, they were like just trying to build their credit, or maybe they'd have a, something would be on there. And remember, I would always tell them, look, go get the secured credit cards, use the secured credit cards to then pay off this debt and then make the payments on the credit cards. Because the most important thing is to get the credit cards, get the debt paid off and the credit cards started so that you're building that history and that payment history. And I had a lot of guys, we rebuilt their credit while we were incarcerated, paid off the stuff. You know, obviously you can, it's so easy to get stuff. Well, not easy. It's not easy, but it's time consuming, but it's a matter of just filling out paperwork. You can get stuff taken off your credit. And there's all kinds of guys that would do that in prison too. They would clean guys' credit histories up while they were incarcerated. And then they'd walk out and they'd have clean credit and they immediately build up their credit. I mean, I'm really lucky that I have experience doing this. I was lucky that I was able to walk out the door and rebuild my credit so quickly. And I'm not, you know, even the credit cards that I have they're not stellar credit cards, but it doesn't really matter because I don't have anything on them. They're doing exactly what they were designed to do, which is to help me reestablish my credit. And that's the most important thing, because at some point I'll be off supervised release, federal probation. I'll be off probation and I'll need that credit.
He understood intimately what it took to qualify for a loan. Cox took out $3.7 million in mortgages, ensnared at least 10 different lenders. Using nearly a dozen stolen identities, he was the mortgage industry's worst nightmare. Welcome to the dark side of the housing boom and an unprecedented wave of fraud. Bloomberg Businessweek. ID theft poster child. He assumed nearly 50 identities. He was a master at obtaining driver's licenses, credit cards, and bank statements in other people's names. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution. They used stolen identities to obtain licenses, purchase vehicles, lease mail drops, rent apartments, and open accounts to receive proceeds from their schemes in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, South Carolina, and North Carolina. The Associated Press.
Hey, my name is Matt Cox, and I am releasing a credit repair and a credit building course. It's called Con Man Credit Secrets. We're going to have open enrollment for 5 days in order to gauge how much interest is in the course. And we're going to be closing it after 5 days. And once we determine how much interest there is, we may or may not be opening up the course again. I'm qualified to do this course specifically because, one, I owned a financial institution. I've seen thousands of credit profiles, credit reports. I've helped clients remove collections, collections, liens, bad debts, late payments from their credit reports. Also, and so I've helped people clean up their credit. I've also helped people build their credit. And this is really where my specialty lies, is in building people's credit. So, and I've done this because I'm able to do this because I was on the inside. And then of course I ended up going on the run. I've built well over between 50 and 100 credit profiles for synthetic identities. I have created synthetic identities with credit scores in excess of 700. Using these credit identities, I have been able to build people's credit by getting secured credit cards, then converting those cards into non-secured credit cards, getting non-secured personal loans, getting mortgages, auto loans. I've been able to leverage those credit profiles in order to get people into homes and borrow millions of dollars in those credit profile names. I know what questions need to be answered in order to get those types of loans. I also know what is required and how underwriting vets every single person that comes across their desk. So I'm in a perfect position to help people do legally what I have done illegally. And that's why I'm doing the course. So the issue for a lot of people is that they have credit, but they have a low credit score. And listen, the problem with that is that a lot of times they've made minor mistakes that are coming back on them. Those minor mistakes become amplified over time. You get higher interest rates, which means you get higher payments. You have less borrowing capacity. You have less of an ability to get into loans with decent interest rates and therefore decent payments. Your ability to leverage your credit is extremely limited by having a low credit score. And that's one of the things we focus on, is explaining to you how to boost your credit score. What small minor decisions you can make to put yourself in a better position, a better borrowing position. And that's really the crux of the problem for most people. They just make minor bad decisions that really, really become, you know, overwhelming over time, because they just don't know how to fix it. And these are small solutions. These are very small little solutions that you have to make, small choices that you have to make to better your credit and put you in a better borrowing position. Some examples that are a problem, and I'll give you a quick example is, and I've done this numerous times, where I've taken someone, typically a synthetic identity. Maybe it was somebody's identity that I stole, and I've repaired their identity. Then I built their identity up, and then 6 months later, I've walked into a car dealership and got 100% financing. Let me give you some examples of how traumatic it can be to have a low credit score. The problem is when you turn around and you go to get into an apartment, and your lease payment is going to be $2,000 a month, and let's say your security deposit is going to be $1,500 a month. But guess what? You got a 590 credit score. So do they let you put up a security deposit of $1,500? No, they want you to double the security deposit. So now it's $3,000. Well, if money isn't abundant, you may not have $3,000. So you don't get into that apartment complex, or maybe your credit score is so low, you don't even get the offer of being able to put up double the security deposit. They look at you and they go, listen, I'm sorry, we don't rent to anybody that doesn't have a 650 plus credit score, period. Doesn't matter that you can say, hey, I lived at my current apartment for 3 years. I've never been late. It doesn't matter. You've got a 590 credit score. We need over a 650. You don't have it. You probably don't have it because you made some minor decisions. Even if you didn't have the money to make your payments, there's ways to make your payments just so you keep your credit score high. You didn't take those steps. Now you're in a bad spot. Or here's another one. Let's say you go to a Ford dealership. They try and put you through their finance company. They pull your credit. Maybe you've made all your payments, but for some reason, your credit score is like a 605. Maybe it's a 590, 605, right around the 600 range. And you look at it and you're like, I don't understand. I've never been late on my credit cards. The problem is maybe you have high balances. Maybe you've pulled your credit multiple times in the last few months and your credit score dropped dramatically. You don't even know what happened. You don't feel like you've made any major decisions. You feel like you've been making your payments on time. What's the problem? You don't know, but here's the problem. When you walk into that dealership and you apply for that vehicle that you know you can afford, guess what happens? They say, oh yeah, you have to put down 20%. So you're trying to buy a $30,000 automobile and they want you to put down $6,000. You don't have it. You don't have $6,000 sitting in the bank to put down 20%. And it's really only because you made a few bad decisions. One or two minor decisions that had you made the correct decisions 3 months earlier, 2 months earlier, you'd probably have gotten 100% financing at a better interest rate. The problem is people will be in a position where they have to put down 20% on their vehicle, end up getting a 14% interest rate, and they'll have a payment of $700 a month. Had they made a few good decisions, they could have walked into that same dealership, put zero down, gotten a 6% interest rate, and had the same exact payment and not had to put down $6,000. It's these little tiny decisions that make the difference between having a great credit score and profile and being someone who just is struggling to get ahead. It's just a little bit of knowledge. That's all it is. And all of this knowledge can be found in Con Man's Credit Secrets.
It's like, guys, oh, maybe that worked 15, 20 years ago. Motherfucker, I just got out of the halfway house. Yeah. You saw my credit score. I got a 770 something credit score.
Yeah.
You know, and that's nothing. It's been higher. Yeah. You know, I mean, in the credit, 6 months I walked out of the halfway house with a 754, I think, maybe 53. 753, 750, over a 750, a plus 750 credit score. Within 6 months,
yeah.
Fucking that ain't. That's not, yeah, that's not easy.
No,
it is easy, but most people couldn't do it because they don't know that. Hey, it's pretty simple, yeah. And that was just with 3 credit cards. I didn't have a variety of different loans. I didn't have a car loan. I didn't have a mortgage. I just had 3 secure credit cards. That's it. Yeah. So
like anybody can really like.
Anybody can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think my credit score has ever dropped below, might have dropped to 745 when I got my car loan.
Yeah.
Because my capacity was so high at that point. You know, you borrow $23,000 and what do you owe? $23,000 because I didn't have anything, I couldn't put anything down. You know, I had no money to put down. They gave me 100% financing, but my interest rate was like 12%. But I made like I made six payments and then I refinanced it. My payments dropped $150.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it'll be, let's say you have a minimum payment. Okay, well, if you're in a real dire straits, let's say your minimum payment's whatever, $80, which it never is. I don't ever have those kinds of payments. Mm-hmm. But let's say it's $80. I can always, worst case scenario, I can make the minimum payment on one credit card and then borrow on that credit card to make the minimum payment on the other credit card. Say, okay, well, I got a 2 payment. The payment on this card is $80 and this one $80. Okay. That's fine. I'll make this one. And then I'll borrow from that card and make this one. Mm-hmm. Is that a temporary fix? Yeah, it's a fix. Do I owe it? Yeah, it is. But I'm trying to keep my balances low and I'm trying to keep my credit in good standing. Like, that's what you have to do sometimes. So, the guy at Bank of America doesn't give a fuck that you didn't pay your fucking $80 minimum payment.
Right.
He didn't give a shit. Nobody's staying up. You didn't hurt anybody.
So that guy, how much money will he save by actually trying to build his credit over time? You
think? How much money will he what?
How much money will he save?
Oh, got hundreds of thousands of dollars. Imagine the difference between somebody who's got perfect A-rated credit and somebody who's got C-rated credit. That guy who's got C-rated credit is going to a buy here, pay here lot. He's putting down a chunk of money. He's buying the car. Most likely your down payment pays for what they actually paid for that vehicle for. So if it's $9,000, they probably bought that car at auction for $3,000. So you're giving them $3,000 down, you owe them $6,000. Your interest rate is probably 28%. The maximum they can charge is probably like 28%. You're going to make those fucking payments for the next 5 years. But really, they're thinking, we're just going to take this car back in 6 months or a year and resell it. The truth is, you're going to pay so much more than the guy that's got perfect credit that can walk in and get a brand new car. You're basically paying the same amount, that $9,000, you're really paying this. You're going to end up paying the same amount as the guy that buys a brand new car for $35,000.
Right.
The course costs $299, and it's absolutely worth it. And let me give you one example of why you want to take the course. And this is the difference between having AAA credit or C and D credit, all right? Which is basically why you want to have plus 750 credit scores, or do you want to have below 650 scores? Let's say 600 scores. The economic impact on your life is huge. And I'm going to give you one example. Let's say that you're trying to finance a vehicle. Now, typically, if you have C and D credit, you have to put down 20%. But let's put that aside. Okay, let's say let's face it, if you're a $40,000 vehicle, someone who's got D credit trying to finance a $40,000 vehicle is hard pressed to come up with 20% of $40,000. That's $8,000. Let's say they said, okay, you know what, 10%, that's still $4,000 plus tag, tax, title. Listen, so we're not going to get into all that. That has its own set of problems. Let's just say you're trying to finance $40,000 vehicle and you have D credit or even C credit. The average national interest rate for a buy here, pay here car lot is 28%. That's average. It can go up, it can go down, depends on the state. So let's just say the average, 28% on a buy here, pay here with someone who's got D credit. That person is going to have a payment on a five-year term. So if they're financing it over the course of 5 years, they're putting nothing down, their payment is going to be $1,245 at a 28% interest. Now, let's say you have double A credit and you walk into any car dealership and you get financed through, let's say you get financed through your own credit union, or maybe your own bank. You don't even go through the car dealership. You just go to your own credit union, get a loan for 5 years, and you finance $40,000 with no money down at a 6% interest rate, which, by the way, is the average for AA credit throughout the nation right now. Maybe different when you see the, when you get the course. Might be higher, might be lower. Listen, a couple of years ago, it was at 1% and 2%. But let's say 6, okay? Let's be reasonable. 6%, $40,000. Do you know what your payment is? Your payment is $773 a month, as opposed to $1,245, $773. Just because you made a couple of good decisions. You don't have to have massive credit cards. You don't have to have credit cards with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 high limits. You can get this interest rate just by having minor credit cards and making the payments. $500 credit limits, but you made the payments on time. You kept the balances low. And we're going to get into all of that in the course. But let me tell you the real difference here is this. The difference is the savings is that if you finance that vehicle at 28% interest over the course of those 5 years, you will pay in $74,725 on a vehicle that you bought at a buy here, pay here lot. If you have double A credit, you get a brand new car. It's got a full warranty, bumper to bumper, for 5 years, and you buy that vehicle, guess what? You only spend $46,400. So the CD borrower ends up spending $34,725 just to finance his vehicle. That's what the cost is on top of the $40,000 he borrowed. The AA borrower only spends $6,400 to finance the same amount of money. And he's got a brand new vehicle. Let me explain one more thing. And this is where it really hits you, where you think, okay, well, yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. No, that's nothing. Because the average person finances, it's like 6 point whatever. But let's round down to 6. The average person finances 6 vehicles in their lifetime. That's average. Maybe you finance more. If you're buying cars at a buy here, pay here lot, you're probably financing a lot more vehicles. So let's say 6 vehicles, though, on average. On average, you're going to spend $208,350 over the course of your life financing those vehicles. But the AA borrower is going to spend $38,400. That means that the person that has C or D credit, who's buying buy here, pay here car lot, at a buy here, pay here car lot, or maybe he's going in and buying it at a dealership, but he's getting it financed through secondary financing and paying it, regardless, you're paying 28%. The difference between paying a 28% interest rate and a 6% interest rate, over the course of your life, you're spending over $170,000. So over the course of your lifetime, you're spending over $170,000 because you didn't have the knowledge to have a plus 750 credit score. A couple of bad decisions cost you hundreds of thousands. And by the way, this is just cars. Imagine if you actually were buying houses. The difference in a home loan, an average of a $350,000 home loan, which is, I believe, the national average, it's in the millions. Vehicles are already almost a couple hundred thousand in cost. What's a home? Millions. You will cost yourself millions because you don't have the knowledge to make a couple of good decisions throughout the month to boost your score. I'm telling you, listen, you need this course. For some people that are contemplating getting the course, the question is, Matt, what if I don't want to do all the steps? What if I get the course, you know, I pay the $299 and I realize that it's more than I want to do. And I'm only going to do a few of these things. I'm only going to implement a few of the things that need to be done to raise my score. And so I end up, I'm probably not going to raise my score from a 600 up to a 800. You know, I'm probably going to raise my score 40 or 50 points. Is it worth it? Well, the difference between raising your points 40 or 50 points is probably raising you out of having, let's say, C credit to B credit. Are you going to be getting 3% and 6% interest rates? You know, no. It's going to be slightly higher. You're going to be in the 11, 12%. Is it going to save you money? Absolutely, it's going to save you money. Is it going to be in the millions over the course of your life? No, but it may be $100,000. And if you think, oh, well, you know, $299 is not worth me saving $100,000, honestly, you've got bigger problems. I mean, if you can't see the value in that. And listen, having the knowledge that how credit works and the minor decisions, even if you think, I don't want to go through all of these different things that you're going to ask me to do, which honestly is so minor. It's really, they're not even excessive. They're just minor decisions that you think to yourself, hey, should I not make my minimum payment or should I make my minimum payment? Like, that's minor. Hey, I don't want to have to sacrifice today to have a better credit score in 6 months. Okay, I get it. You can. There are still ways around that. Borrowing from one credit card to pay another credit card is one of those. There are minor decisions that you can make to help boost your score. Are you going to make all of them? Probably not. Maybe you're not. But you're going to make enough that's going to make a difference in your life. And maybe over the course of your life, you'll start to implement these changes and go back and watch the course again. I definitely think that happens when the next time that you go to get an apartment and that person, that leasing agent says, yeah, I'm sorry, you're going to have to put up double the security deposit. And you go, I don't understand. I make my payments. You might think, you know what? Maybe I need to watch that course again. And you have access to the course. You know what? I probably shouldn't have done this. I probably shouldn't have done that. Let me go back and take a look at that again. The next time you go to get a car that you want, hey, this car, it's $70,000. I know I can make the payment and you know I know it. And you go in and they say, yeah, I'm sorry, we can't get you the 6% interest rate. Yours is going to be 12%. Maybe you still buy the car. I don't suggest you buy the car. I suggest you wait 6 months and make a couple of changes and go back and get the 6%. Or maybe you buy the car and refinance it, implement those changes and refinance it at that time. The great thing about the course is that you have access to go back and make those corrections throughout your life because all of this is forever. They're not making any changes. They haven't made any changes in 30 or 40 years. The changes they're making are minor, and typically they're always in the consumer's best interest. So it's absolutely 100% worth it to get the course. How hard is it to implement the steps that are laid out in the course? It's not difficult. There's nothing in the course that any average American citizen can do. Okay, everything is laid out very simply. These are simple steps. They're not difficult. I'm not asking you to write up a lawsuit and file it in federal court. I'm not asking you to write numerous letters or do anything that is beyond your capability. In fact, the few letters that you may have to write if you have bad credit are already written. Okay, I'm not asking you to do anything that the average person can't do. In fact, this course has been taught inside of prisons, and I've had inmates get out of prison, implement these steps, and within 6 months have 750 plus credit scores. I know guys that have taken the courses that I taught in prison that have gotten out and now have a dozen houses in their names with perfect credit. And you know what their jobs were prior to prison? They were drug dealers. These are guys that were born and raised in the projects, went to schools that were in horrible districts, went to prison, took a couple of credit courses in prison, got out, and within 4 or 5 years, they're buying dozens of houses. This is not difficult. These aren't difficult steps. I wouldn't ask anybody to do anything that was beyond their capability. The average person can easily implement the steps that are in this course. It is an absolute must. You really, really do need, you need the information in the course, and it's easily laid out and it's easy to follow. Why is getting this course a priority? Why is making these few minor changes in your monthly routine, why is that a priority? All right, let me give you an example. You've got, let's say, Sally. Sally is a school teacher. She's got two kids she's raising. She has bigger problems. She's thinking, I have bigger problems than to worry about cleaning up my credit. You know, maybe she messed it up 5 years ago. Maybe she messed it up 10 years ago. You know, I don't know. What I know is that she's got a low credit score. She's got several late payments, and she needs to establish new credit. And she's thinking, why is this a big deal? I don't see that this is going to affect me right now. It's going to eventually affect you. Eventually, it's like a ticking time bomb. At some point, what happens when those bad accounts go into collections? And the next thing you know, you get called into your employer and they say, hey, listen, this person got a judgment against you and they're going to garner your wages. I think people in this position know people that have had their wages garnered. And listen, I've been in the position where I had about 10 or 12 guys working underneath me, and I've gotten the letters in that's from where someone had a judgment and I was being told, hey, by the Secretary of State saying, guess what? You have to garner a certain amount of this guy's wages to make these payments on this judgment. Look, you don't want to let it get to that point. You can do a few minor things to clean up your credit. You can save yourself hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million within a lifetime. It doesn't seem like a priority right now, but these are minor decisions that you need to make now for your future. And now is the time to make those decisions. It should be a priority. These aren't difficult steps. Make those decisions now, and in the future, it will come back to you tenfold. Again, the course is only open for 5 days. Click the link in the description and sign up for the course. Who's a good fit for this course? This is a perfect course for a person who has, let's say, no credit. All right? You definitely need this course. It's going to go in depth into building your credit from scratch. And I know many, many times I've been contacted by people that have said, hey, I don't understand. I've applied for several credit cards. I can't seem to get a credit card. How do I even start my credit? We go into how you can start your credit, build your credit as quickly as possible. You can get over 750 credit scores in 6 months, and you can be moving up the credit score ladder to 800 after that. And these are simple steps, okay? So you can do that even if you have no credit. If you have bad credit, and I mean severely bad credit, multiple collections, you're also a perfect person for the course, because we go into how to basically scrub your credit report of those collections, those late payments, you know, and it takes time, but we go over how to go about doing that. And let's face it, you have time. If you don't start now, it'll never happen. So you have to start now. The next person is, let's say you have, you say, you know what, my credit's okay. Well, the difference is if you can boost your credit from being in a B range to an A or a double A range, it's the difference between getting interest rates of 12% to 18% and getting them at 6%. It's worth it. It's worth to take the course to implement those steps that we go through. You're a perfect person for this course. Now, listen, if you're trying to get up to 700, also, you're going to learn something in this course that's going to make you realize I'm making some mistakes here. I need to do this. I need to make a few subtle changes to boost me up over 750. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you're already over 750, you know, maybe you're perfect. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're the person that doesn't need this course. For $299, though, you may learn something. Maybe you're saying, hey, you know what, Matt, I've got a 3% interest rate on my vehicle. I have a 5.5% interest rate on my home. Everything's good. Okay, well, maybe you want to start a small business. Maybe you want to leverage some of your credit to buy and sell houses. And right now you're saying, I don't really know how to do that. I don't know really how to leverage my credit so that I can do something like trade in the stock market. You know, how can I go to a trading firm and get them to give me $50 or $100,000 in order to buy and trade stocks? Well, if you're already at 750, but you want to get to the 800s where those types of things are possible, this is the course. It's definitely worth it. It should be a priority. And I think that everybody can benefit from this course. And now let's say you've gone through the course, you've got plus 750 credit scores. What does that mean? And let me give you an example. You know, I got out of prison about, when I get out of prison, got out of prison in late 2019. I walked out of the halfway house, and I get into this later, but I walked out of the halfway house with over a 750 credit score. And let me give you an example of how that, what that feels like or what that means. The other day, now I've established my credit several years ago. The other day I needed to buy a car. I called my credit union. Listen, we're gonna talk about credit unions. Credit unions are great. You have to establish an account with a credit union. So I call my credit union and I said, listen, I need to buy a car. They said, how much do you want? I said, $35,000. They said, okay, hold on a second, Mr. Cox. I answered a few questions. Where do you currently work? They saw how much money I have in the bank. By the way, I have very little money in my credit union. I opened a savings account. I have $400 or $500 in that account, but I've established it. All you need to do is establish yourself in the credit union. Okay, so they say, give us a few minutes. They come back 3 or 4 minutes later, the person on the line comes back and says, okay, we've approved you up to $35,000. By the way, if I told them $60,000, I would have gotten $60,000. I only needed $35,000 to buy this specific vehicle. They said, we've approved you for $35,000. I said, okay. They said, you can finance up to 125% of the vehicle's value, which means that if the vehicle costs $20,000, they'll let me finance 25% more than the $20,000. So 25% more than that's $5,000 extra. So they're saying, Mr. Cox, you can buy the vehicle, you can finance the tax, tag, title, any negative equity in the vehicle that you're trading in can also be financed into this vehicle. You can also finance any extended warranties, you want a $1,200 radio put in, we'll finance that too. So over 25% over the value of the vehicle. I end up financing the vehicle. I think in the end I ended up getting something. It was like a used vehicle. It was like a $25,000 vehicle, $26,000 I think I financed. My payment on that vehicle, by the way, my interest rate was about, I think it's like 8%. And by the way, rates are high. So I got like an 8% interest rate on my vehicle. My payment is less than $400 a month. So it's less than $400 a month at around 7.5% to 8% interest rate, 5-year term, no money down. So the woman, the customer service person tells me that, and then she says, oh, by the way, the underwriter wanted to let you know you've been approved for a $20,000 credit card. And I went, okay. She said, do you want it? And I said, sure. Yeah. Go ahead and send it to me. She said, and that, by the way, the credit card's at 8% interest rate. I said, okay, no problem. She said, so she sent me, they're going to send me that. I got that a couple weeks later. But what happened was while I was telling her where to mail the card, she said, I realized, I said, you know what I should do? I owe like $5,000 on one credit card. I have a couple credit cards for $20,000-$30,000. And I was like, I owe $4,000 here, $5,000 there. I owe like six. I've been paying, make the payments. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and consolidate those. And I said, hey, listen, can I get a personal loan for $15,000? And she said, hold on a second. Put me on hold. 2 minutes later, she comes back and says, your $15,000 personal loan has been approved. Do you want it? And I said, yeah. She said, okay, I'm going to email you a couple of documents for you to sign, and we'll have and if you get them back to me today, we'll have the money in your account by tomorrow. The next day, I had $15,000 in my bank account in the credit union. I had 2 weeks later, I got my credit card. I don't know why it took 2 weeks, but whatever. I got my $20,000 credit card. A couple of days later, I walked into the dealership and I got that car that I financed for, I don't know what it was, $25,000, $26,000. They never asked me for a pay stub. They never asked me for a W-2. They didn't make one phone call to an employer. They didn't do anything other than talk to me on the phone and pull my credit. Now, it was a hard credit pull, but I don't think it harmed me any since I haven't had my credit pulled in months. So that's one minor thing. The one thing that was great about that is at no time did I think I wasn't going to get everything I asked for. Not once did I think, gosh, I wonder if they'll approve me. I was just wondering, what's the interest rate going to be? And on a whim, I said, oh, give me an extra 15 grand. So it's a great feeling. It's a feeling of confidence that I've been making the right decisions since I got out of prison, by the way. Since I got out of prison, I've made the right decisions, and I have a borrowing capacity in the hundreds of thousands of dollars right now. I don't take it. I'm not in a position to do anything with that right now, but I will soon. So with that said, what if you said, Matt, I've gone through the course, I got the 750 credit scores, you know, maybe you bought a house, okay? The great thing about buying a house is that if you buy the house, you have equity, you can always get a home equity line of credit. Now, lenders out there right now are offering 100 and 120% home equity lines of credit if you have over a credit score of 700 to 750. Well, if you've got a 750 credit score, you meet all the other requirements, you bought a house for $300,000, you can go out and you can get $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 credit line. What can you do with that? Maybe you can start a business. Maybe you can, there's tons of things you can do. You could buy stocks. You could trade the stock market. You could invest in a business. You could start a business. There's lots of things that you could do with a home equity line of credit. But let's say you're not even there. You said, okay, that's fine. I'm not there yet, Matt. But you know what? I do like to trade stocks. Great. You can apply to get a margin account. So you could go to your whatever stock firm you're trading with, apply for a margin account, and they will allow you to borrow against your investments. So you're able to use that money to buy stocks and borrow against your current investments. That's another huge, at a very reasonable interest rate. So that's another great possibility that you have. The other thing is this, you could be a peer-to-peer lender. You know what a peer-to-peer lender is? Like, I'll give you an example, because there's many different examples. There's examples for providing peer-to-peer lending for, let's say, cashing checks, for check cashing companies. There's numerous examples, and I'll give you a good example. You could be a hard money lender. You know what a hard money lender is? A hard money lender is a guy that lends money on the equity in houses. So let's say everybody knows what a flipper is. Everybody knows it's somebody who goes out there and flips houses. You could go into your bank. You can apply for a credit line, and you can be a peer-to-peer lender you can do peer-to-peer lending as a hard money lender, which means that if Todd wants to buy a house and he wants to fix it up and sell it, you can lend him the $100,000 to buy the house. You borrow that, you're lending that money to Todd at, let's say you're charging him 2 points on the $100,000. He already owes you $2,000 at closing. Plus, you could charge him, let's say, 14% of simple interest on the loan. So for the next 6 months, while he's paying you every month, you're making 14% on a $100,000 loan. But you don't have $100,000. You went to your credit union or your bank and you got a $200,000 or $300,000 loan that they allow you to lend to Todd and they charge you 6 or 8%. So you're making the difference between 8% and 14%. So you're making 6% plus 2 points on money that you are the middleman on. You're not even lending your own money. You're lending money based on your credit line with your credit union to Todd so he can fix up that house. Without perfect credit, you can't do that. You could also buy rental properties. You're in a great position to get great interest rates on rental properties. You could go and get a business loan from your bank. Maybe you've been working in the restaurant industry for the past 5 or 10 years. You think you could run your own restaurant. You're in a position where you can go get a small business loan from the Small Business Administration or maybe your credit union to open your own restaurant. Or maybe it's something else. Maybe you buy and sell cars on the side and you think, you know what? I want to get a credit line so I can start buying cars in bulk and I want to start a buy here, pay here lot. You're now in a position to do that all because you made a few simple decisions every single month. You just knew what the right decisions to make were. That's it. These aren't huge decisions. They're just making the right decisions to put yourself in a position where you can be successful in life. And you'll save millions and maybe make millions by making those small decisions. That's why you're buying the course. That's why this course is a huge benefit to you. So if you buy the course and implement the changes to your life within the course, your life is going to change in an amazing way. Guys, click the link below, buy the course. It's only open for 5 days. We don't know if it's going to open again. We need to know your level of commitment now. Make the right decision and sign up.